Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Howdy doodly.
Hi, Sarah!
Oh, you do have energy. That's good.
I'm so ready. Let's do this thing.
Sweet. Can you tell I sound kind of froggy? I actually sound way better than I did this morning. And last night, I actually lost my voice completely.
Well, I'm glad we didn't record last night. It wouldn't have been very productive.
No, it wouldn't have worked out very well. We would have had to, like, dial up the whispering, and it would have sounded really creepy. But yes, I have whatever cold my kids have. But I actually have it worse than either. They're fine. They're like 3 days and they're good. And I don't know. They never seem to have like this froggy throat thing. So I guess it's just demonstrating the wear and tear my current lifestyle is doing on my immune system.
Word. So, you want me to talk for?
Tell me about you.
Okay, so I just got home from CrossFit because we're not recording at our usual day and time. And, man, I'm just, you know, there's probably like two people that listen that CrossFit, but let me just tell you that behind the neck presses will kick your butt, okay? I don't have those muscles.
What is a behind the neck press?
Like you put the bar behind your neck and then you press it above your head.
Up and you're standing up when you do it?
Yeah, you're standing up when you do it.
Ow. I would totally drop it on my head.
It's not a good plan to do that.
No.
So they teach you ways to not drop things on your head. Like how to bail out of a movement. Yeah. So the weight piles up quick on that. I guess if you could do a lot of pull-ups, maybe you would be good at that because I think it's like the same set of muscles. Like,
but it's the opposite. It's the complete opposite because you're pushing right. up instead of
yeah. But pulling. I can't even pretend to want to do a pull-up. It's so bad. There aren't enough bands in the gym. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, so I'm feeling totally endorphinized from CrossFitting, and I came home and Matt had made a grass-fed steak and a giant portion of bacon fat cabbage and roasted Brussels sprouts, which are like my favorite vegetables. So I am ready to go.
Good. I'm having one of those days where I'm feeling very sorry for myself. So we're gonna balance, we're gonna average at good.
Well, yesterday was my day to feel sorry for myself, and I think it's probably time that I had a confessional with everyone. So I haven't even gotten through listening to the whole weight loss show that we did because it's really, really emotional for me. And I had someone Twitter me and say not to worry about going to Paleo FX because I look great and I'm beautiful on the inside, and it was like really super nice, but also
that's a nice Twitter follower.
I know.
But also, it really doesn't help because I don't want to look nice on the inside. Like, I want to look nice on the outside. And honestly, you know, we talk a lot about health and focusing on being healthy rather than weight loss. And that's something that I'm working on just as much as I'm asking other people to work on. You know, like it's really, really difficult for me to have been at this weight for so long. And honestly, I am trying really hard. I'm eating squeaky clean and I'm CrossFitting and I've put on 2 pounds. Like, that's really, really tough. And I shouldn't even have a scale. I should have thrown out my scale. I shouldn't even be worrying about it. But at the same time, like, I still have a lot of weight to lose and I shouldn't be gaining weight. Like, there is something going on with me and I'm going to try to figure it out. I started a food log today. They usually make me really neurotic about food. Like, as a disordered eating person, once I start logging my food, I get weird about it.
It starts to influence how you choose to eat because of, that's one of those like diet tips that never actually worked all that well for me, was like, just write down everything you eat, because it changes how you eat. Like, most people can't write down everything they eat without it influencing their choices.
Well, it's not just that it influences my choices, it creates a general mentality of disordered eating. Like, I don't know how to describe that more than just, you know, usually I try to focus on, am I hungry or not, and what's the best choice for me to eat right now? Like, that's the way that I stayed the healthiest, right? Like, we only keep healthy things in the house so that when I'm hungry, I eat and I don't have to worry about it. And that's worked for me for a really long time, especially, you know, when we're talking about autoimmune protocol and all that kind of stuff. Like, as limiting as it is, as long as there's safe choices in the house and I feel like when I'm hungry, I can eat whatever I need, it has created like a safe zone for me around food and I don't have disordered eating then. But once we start talking about like limiting foods and, you know, or writing down foods or taking pictures of foods, I've talked before about how I can't take pictures of everything that I eat for people on the blog anymore because it creates disordered eating for me. Like, I have to be really hyper aware of that. So my trainer at the gym, who's also a paleo guru, has asked me to start logging my food so that she can help me. I mean, frankly, I can't even tell right now if I'm under eating or if I'm overeating because I'm just not paying attention to my food at all. I'm just only eating when I'm hungry. And I'm definitely probably eating more volume since I started CrossFit because my metabolic rate has increased. And, you know, whether or not I'm eating too much or whether or not I'm not eating enough, like, I looked at my food today and realized I definitely had not eaten enough. Like, and I realized at 4 o'clock when I wanted chocolate and I looked back at my food log and I was like, well, duh. Like,
right.
I haven't eaten anything all day. Like, I mean, I had eaten stuff, but just it wasn't enough. So I'm hoping that it will, you know, be helpful. But the fact of the matter was I had like this emotional breakdown yesterday because I went to go clothes shopping with a friend for PaleoFX. It's going to be warm there and it's not warm here. And I have like no spring clothes. And so I wanted to get a couple of spring dresses that I could, you know, wear later as well, but just that I would have something to take. And, I had like this total freak out because I was convinced that I was going to be like 2 sizes bigger. And I got on the scale and I had gained 0.5 pound again. And, which happens to me all the time after I work out. Like, it seems to happen every time I work out, I either stop losing or I gain a little bit. And I just was so frustrated. And, you know, Matt was like, you need to listen to your own advice. Like, have you even paid attention to what you tell thousands of women every week? Well, not just women, but thousands of people every week. He's like, it's not about weight loss. It's about health. Look at you. You're way more muscular. You're able to move faster and, you know, have more energy. It's like, you're obviously, this is working for you. We need to dial in your food, or we need to take you to get your, you know, thyroid levels tested or whatever it ends up being. That's my problem. He's like, but don't freak out and give up on yourself. Like, you're better off than you were in 2012 at the end when you were just eating paleo treats all the time and laying on the sofa. Like, yeah, that's
true.
Can
I just say, good job, Matt.
I know.
Like, way to be exactly the right thing to say.
I know. He's such my hero. So the irony was, I sent this text to you, and I sent this text to my trainer and to the friend that I was going shopping with. And I was like, yeah, so I'm totally having a hissy fit and I've been crying and I don't want to like do anything with life right now because I gained half a pound. And I totally had a temper tantrum. And every single person was like, get over yourself and, you know, figure it out, but don't stress out because that's not helping the situation. And it didn't. So I went shopping and I didn't gain any sizes.
Like, of course not.
All this weight that I've lost, I've actually lost inches. And jeans fit better. The interesting thing for me, though, is that my clothes, I haven't changed sizes, but they fit totally different. Like, I have more room in the waist, but I have no room in the booty because I'm doing so much squats that my butt has literally doubled in volume. I had such a flat butt before. So, it doesn't feel like I've changed at all because I'm still wearing the same size clothes. And when I look in the mirror, I'm kind of unhappy with what I'm looking at because my body shape has changed. And, what I see rather than a smaller waist is bigger hips and bigger butt. And I'm like, why am I getting bigger? And Matt's like, shut up. You look great. So, yeah, moral of the story, the scale is stupid. The scale is so stupid.
I've decided not to weigh myself until a month after the book is done.
Yeah, I don't even know that I would after. I don't know. Oh, man, it was such an emotional blow for me. I literally, like, laid around crying for 20 minutes and was like, oh, I don't want to go shopping. I don't want to be seen in public. I'm such a humiliation to myself. And, like, it was bad. It was really bad. And so to everyone, that kind of stuff happens, especially when you're, you know, being lady hormonal, I guess, and pick yourself up by your bootstraps and focus on the things that you are doing that's right. Like, I know that I'm not overindulging in sweets. I know that I'm not drinking. I know that I'm eating the right kinds of paleo foods, and whether or not they're in the right quantities, I'm going to need to figure out. But ultimately, I'm making all kinds of really good choices, and because I have an autoimmune disease, I've, you know, regulated my working out, my CrossFit, to 3 times a week. I'm not overdoing it on purpose. I'm really trying to pace myself and rest in between. So I'm like, what more could I really be doing? Not much, you know, like there's bits and pieces that I might be able to tweak, but overall I have a lot to be proud of, and I shouldn't be upset or ashamed at what I'm doing, because as much as I want to look healthy, I am healthy. I know that I am healthy, and I'm in a really good place right now in terms of energy and taking care of myself. And nobody else knows except me now that I've told everyone that I gained, you know, a couple of pounds on the scale, because I'm the only one that's getting on the scale and looking at it. Everybody else is like, oh, Stacey, check out your triceps on that deadlift photo. And I'm like, yeah, those are muscles. Like, where'd they come from? And then at the same time, I'm having a temper tantrum about gaining weight. Like, hello, muscles weigh more than fat, Stacey. So yeah. To all of you who need a pep talk, have the same pep talk I had with myself and feel good about yourself. Oh, did that make any sense? I'm so manic. Yeah.
No, that was a good, you know what? There's somebody out there who's feeling really down on themselves for like gaining a couple pounds, and you just made them like totally refocus and feel great about themselves. So I think that was really cool.
Okay.
Plus I didn't have to use my voice for any of it. That worked well for me.
I am not going to do science with Stacey this week though. So you're going to have to.
I think I can probably swing something.
All right. Cool. Should we do it? Have I ranted enough?
Yeah. Should we tell people what the show's about?
I guess.
Maybe.
Yes.
Do you know what the show's about? Did you?
We're doing breastfeeding and first foods later. So this must be pregnancy.
Yeah. We're doing another pregnancy show. We have tons of questions.
Irony. Neither one of us has had a paleo pregnancy nor intends to be pregnant.
Nope. We are done. We're done. I am done.
We are done.
We're all done.
Yep. So we will we'll do our best.
We'll live vicariously. That sounds great.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science.
So today for Science with Sarah, I really wanted to answer a fairly simple question. And that question is eating paleo safe during pregnancy? And is it a, you know, well-rounded enough nutrition to be able to grow a healthy baby? And the, you know, very, very simple answer is yes, it is perfectly safe. And by eating paleo, you will be getting all of the nutrition that your body needs and that the baby growing inside you needs for a healthy pregnancy, a healthy baby. So rather than just leaving it at that, as tempting as it is with my froggy voice, I wanted to expand on that a little bit, because one of the ways that I really like to introduce the concept of a paleo diet to people, I really like to focus on the positive. And I think often when people are, you know, sharing this great new diet that they've found with their friends, they basically give the don't rules. Don't eat grains, don't eat dairy, don't eat, you know, processed foods, don't eat refined sugar, don't eat legumes, don't eat modern vegetable oils. And it sounds like you're cutting out all of these foods and you're cutting out food groups. And when you talk about cutting out grains and you talk about cutting out dairy, you're cutting out half of the, you know, USDA MyPlate guideline now. So it can get very intimidating, and especially for somebody new who's looking at a paleo diet and looking at cutting out food groups, it can feel like that must mean that they're not going to be getting enough nutrition. So I want to reassure people who are contemplating a paleo diet or who have just started a paleo diet and finding out that they're pregnant or are pregnant and contemplating, that the foods that you are cutting out in when you adopt a paleo diet are the least nutrient dense foods. So the foods that you're cutting out are really the foods that have much, much less to offer your body than the foods that you keep in. So the foods that you keep in are meat, eggs, fish, vegetables, fruits, nuts, and seeds. Those are all the most nutrient dense. By nutrient dense, I mean those are the foods that have the most vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, high quality essential fatty acids that your body needs, amino acids that your body needs to make proteins, everything that your body needs to make everything in it. You know, your body is constantly making new proteins, making new cells. And when you feed your body that nutrition, your body has an easy time, you know, making the things it needs. When it can make the things it needs, everything works properly. When it can make the things it needs, it can give nutrition to a baby that's growing inside you. So when you compare the nutrition in even the healthiest grains, I made a list of sort of the top, you know, healthiest grains that I could think of, the ones that are sort of billed as, you know, these are, you know, oatmeal and brown rice and multigrain bread and whole wheat pasta and quinoa and just, you know, the really sort of natural whole grains. And I looked at the vitamin content and the mineral content per calorie. And then I looked at a list of vegetables, just sort of random vegetables that you could find in your store, broccoli and sweet potatoes and carrots and, you know, green beans and lettuce and spinach, sort of, you know, normal vegetables. And when you look at it calorie for calorie, when you look at vitamins, vegetables have anywhere between double and 100 times more of every vitamin. When it comes to minerals, with the exception of manganese, which is about the same, and selenium, which actually grains do have slightly more selenium in them than vegetables do on average, unless you're getting vegetables that are grown in sort of local farms, small scale with amended soil. That's sort of a different thing, but just there isn't nutritional information for those kinds of vegetables out there. So you just look at, like, these are just comparing the normal vegetables you get in the store, not organic, you know, nothing special about them. Every mineral except manganese and selenium, which I just mentioned. Every other essential mineral that that is in the USDA database, the vegetables have more, and typically double to about four times more minerals. They also have way more antioxidants. And calorie for calorie, the glycemic load of vegetables is I've started using glycemic load instead of glycemic index. I should probably explain that. Glycemic index is a measure of how quickly the sugars in a food impact your blood, the sugar in your blood. So how quickly the sugar that's in that food after you eat it becomes sugar in your blood. Glycemic load is a measurement of how quickly that sugar gets into your blood, but it's corrected for how carbohydrate dense a food is. So for example, watermelon has a high glycemic index because the sugars in it can go to your blood really quickly. But watermelon also has a really large water content. So you have to eat a lot of watermelon for it to actually raise your blood sugar. So it has a low glycemic load. So when you look at the glycemic load of vegetables, most vegetables have a glycemic load of like 1, 2, 3. The vegetables that I was looking at had an average glycemic load of about 3.5. And that's because there was a mix of non-starchy and starchy vegetables. Starchy vegetables might have a glycemic load around 8 to 10. There's a few super starchy vegetables that are higher than 10. The grains that I had that were these sort of like healthiest grains had a glycemic load of 14. So just as a gauge, a glycemic load between 0 and 10 is considered low. That means it doesn't impact your blood sugar very much at all. Between 10 and 20 is considered moderate, and that's impacting your blood sugar fairly noticeably. And above 20 is considered high. So you're looking at, you know, a serving of vegetables versus a serving of pasta. You know, most people actually eat 2 or 3 servings of pasta. You're getting way more nutrition in the vegetables. And this isn't even looking at how nutrient dense meat is, how nutrient dense fish is, how nutrient dense pastured eggs are, how nutrient dense fruit is. And by the way, the fiber content between vegetables and grains, because we always hear that we have to eat our grains for the fiber content. The fiber content is about the same. So what I'm trying to say is just looking at the nutrient content of foods that contain grains versus foods that are, you know, vegetables, it's no contest. Vegetables win every time. Dairy does have calcium. It does have vitamin A and vitamin D because it's added into it. And it doesn't really have anything else to offer. It is really easy to get calcium and vitamin A and vitamin D from vegetables and animal foods. So, and vitamin D is free from the sun, which is great. So, you are not missing out on anything. And I would definitely refer people back to our dairy show where I really, I think, explained in a little bit more detail, the, where other sources of calcium are in the paleo diet. So what I really want people to focus on is when you choose a paleo diet and you're eating a variety of meat and fish and eggs and vegetables and fruit and nuts and seeds, and you are eating a variety and you are eating, you know, a lot of people think paleo is just meat, and it's not. It's, you know, animal kingdom and plant kingdom. It's all of it. You are getting the most nutrient dense foods. You are actually providing more nutrition for your baby than you ever could by including grains or legumes or dairy in your diet. Not to mention getting more omega-3 fatty acids, which have shown to be critical for the development of the baby's brain. And not to mention, you know, giving foods that will help manage your blood sugar, which helps manage your stress, which helps you sleep. And those are all other really important things during pregnancy.
I think the only thing that you didn't mention that I know that people get more of that's important in pregnancy is folate. Do you want to mention that quickly?
Yeah, so folate is a B vitamin. It is richly found in many, many vegetables. A synthetic version of folate called folic acid, which is, you know, a lot of people use the terms folate and folic acid interchangeably. I am guilty of sometimes using those terms interchangeably. Folic acid is added to grain products. That's what one of the things that grains are fortified with, because they naturally don't contain any. And when you compare the folic acid content of grains, and there's some research to show that the body doesn't use folic acid very efficiently, especially compared to folate, which is the natural form. Even when you look at fortified grains, vegetables still have more folate in them. So I know that Chris Kresser still recommends that pregnant women take folate supplements. And I don't know if he has that on his website or if he has that in the Healthy Baby Code, you know?
I'm pretty sure there's an article on the web, and Matt will be able to find it. But to be clear, he does specify folate and not folic acid.
And it's a little bit trickier to find folate in supplement forms, but I'm trusting that he will have also – he's got a little store on his blog of all the products that he recommends people take. So I'm guessing he'll have links. Is that it?
I know when I was pregnant that I didn't like taking prenatals before, you know, I wasn't paleo when I was pregnant, just to be very clear, because we didn't cover that enough already. But my OB wanted me to take folic acid because I didn't want to take a prenatal. It didn't make me feel good, and it just didn't seem right to take. So because I know so many doctors are recommending omega-3 and folic acid supplements, I think it's important that we explain that not only are you getting a higher natural dose of omega-3 and folate, but because you're eating less omega-6, the omega-3 does more good in your body. And because you're not eating grains, which have an anti-nutrient property depleting your body of the folic acid that you're putting into it from the fortified grains, you're actually more easily able to absorb the folate that's naturally in the vegetables. So whether or not you choose to supplement is your personal choice, but it's important to realize that with paleo diet, you're increasing the natural quantities that you would consume of the two most important recommended supplements for pregnant women with paleo diet.
Yeah, and just as a general rule, when you consume sort of vitamins and minerals as part of a whole food, you tend to consume not just, you know, that one particular vitamin, but vitamins and minerals act synergistically with each other, which means that they act together. And so often the sum of a few different vitamins or minerals is better for your body than one individual. So when you consume it as part of a whole food, you get this like whole package. So you get what are called cofactors. That basically means that it can be influence how easy it is to absorb and how easy it is for your body to use appropriately. So I always try and recommend that people as often as possible get whatever their body's deficient in a whole food source, because it just tends to be used better by your body.
Word. Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope.
So, Alyssa from Denmark asks, "Hi, Sarah and Stacy, I absolutely love your show." Thank you, Alyssa. "It's actually what convinced me that my gut feeling, pun intended, was right about needing to go paleo. Since then, about 4 weeks ago, I am feeling significantly better, and I've noticed changes for the better in my daughter, who is breastfeeding. As we approach her first birthday, Hubs and I are thinking about starting to try for another baby. I am new to paleo and would like my body to be in the best shape, mentally, emotionally, and physically, before getting pregnant. We have set our tentative date to start trying in 3 months. Should I be doing something like the AIP before trying to conceive, or is just going paleo enough? Love the show. I feel like I'm listening to two good friends." Thanks, Alyssa. There are lots of awesome, wonderful things happening in that question. Because I'm just going to totally dominate this show, I'm going to tell you that, first of all, I think being paleo in and of itself is a really good way to start focusing on fertility and putting your body in the best shape that it can, specifically mentally and emotionally. You're needing to focus on, in my opinion, your relationship with your husband and de-stressing and relaxing. I find that once you're pregnant with another child, especially when you have one in the way, the whole dynamic of the family changes. So I would encourage you to kind of, you know, focus on that and enjoy these moments before you're, you know, tied up. Once you're on a one-to-one ratio with kids, life just gets interesting. And man, once you're outnumbered, it's a game. So,
that was the big decision with stopping at two.
Yeah. Wesley gets away with everything. We're just like, whatever. We did all right with the first two. No, I'm kidding. Kind of. So the other thing I would say is, for me personally, if I were looking to get pregnant again, I would focus on some of the fertility-centric foods. I think Chris Kresser probably would be the source to focus on that. I know Weston A. Price Foundation also has some good information about that. Really focus on getting nutrients.
That new book, Beautiful Babies.
Have you seen it? Yes, I have. Heard of it. I have not peeped through it yet.
I have given it a quick thumb through and saw lots of really great stuff and a few things I disagree with. But it's called Beautiful Babies by Kristen. I'm going to go with Michaelis.
We'll put a link in the show notes.
But she has a lot of information that is sort of put in book form for people that is very much the same information. She has like the Weston A. Price formula recipes and things like that in her book. So people who are kind of, you know, Weston, it's a little bit more Weston A. Price than paleo. It kind of crosses from one to the other. But it does have some really great stuff like that in it.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, depending on which parts we're adapting, I think Sarah, you and I and Practical Paleo, those kinds of books where we kind of take the best of both of those worlds and merge them together. We need to coin this as something and put out our own book. But anyway, so I think, you know, what you'll find in that kind of literature is a serious focus on the most nutrient-dense foods that you can eat. Pastured egg yolks, organ meats,
fish,
healthy fats, fish. You know, the food that we talk about including as being helpful on a regular basis, we would say you really need to focus on that if you're looking at fertility, and even more so, probably consume more than we usually recommend. So where, Sarah, I think you recommend 3 servings of fatty fish a week. Is that right?
At least 3.
Okay. So we would probably say, you know, strive for 4 to 5 or whatever you feel comfortable eating.
Or 10.
Yeah. Just don't focus on the high mercury foods because...
don't pilot whale.
Right. If you listen to our first pregnancy show, I think the Science with Sarah segment on that was about mercury and fish. But most fish don't have a problem. So if you just stick to the list that we mentioned before that are safe to eat, have at it. There's not a lot of mercury in those fish. And they're super, super great for growing baby bones and baby brains, which is what you want. Cool?
Yeah, cool. I'm just going to add that, Alyssa never said that she had an autoimmune condition, so I'm not quite sure exactly why she's looking at the autoimmune protocol. Assuming if the answer is she doesn't and she's just, you know, a lot of people look at the autoimmune protocol as these days, actually I'm finding this a lot. People just look at it as being this like super clean version of paleo for optimal health, which I think is a really neat thing that people are looking at it that way. But I don't think that you need to go there. I think just getting paleo dialed in is good enough. If Alyssa does have an autoimmune disease, I would say keep it in the back of your head. But because the immune system shifts, you know, so dramatically during pregnancy, you know, people tend to have, with autoimmune disease, tend to have one of two things happen when they get pregnant. The more common thing to happen is for the autoimmune disease to go into remission, or at least to see symptoms decrease. And if that's the case, I mean, I would enjoy getting away with a little bit more. I probably would still stay away from tomatoes, but I've become really anti-tomato lately. But, you know, I would enjoy the fact that your immune system is not as easy to get ramped up, and you may very well be able to see some really great gut healing just with standard paleo, just because your hormones are doing great things for you. And then keep it in mind if you have a flare after the baby's born, or often if you don't have a flare after the baby's born, some people experience a flare after your baby weans.
So, yep, I'm raising my hand on that one.
I had a flare after my daughters were born, but I did after my youngest. It wasn't even when she weaned. It was when she night weaned, which dramatically decreased the number of times. Like, she went from nursing like 6 or 7 times in a 24-hour period to once or twice. And that was when I started to experience my flare, which is what brought me to paleo in the first place. So I would just keep it in the back of your head for that. If you happen to be one of the more unlucky people, and it tends to be certain diseases that tend to experience flares during pregnancy, then the autoimmune protocol is definitely something to help get you through pregnancy. So I would work on getting paleo dialed in and enjoy the process of getting pregnant. It's fun stuff.
And also, Alyssa, I don't know if you're fertile yet, because you say you're still breastfeeding, but if you're, for those who are wanting to either tandem nurse or try to bring about fertility while still breastfeeding, there are, you know, some things that you might need to look into, and I would definitely recommend a little Google on that. There might be some information on paleo for women. We haven't really talked in depth about that, and I wouldn't claim myself to be an expert, but I do have lots of friends in the breastfeeding community that successfully continued to nurse through pregnancy. But also be aware that most women between the 9 and 12 week mark of pregnancy will lose their milk supply. So be prepared for that. You could continue to nurse your child for comfort, but for the most part, the milk supply will likely decrease. So if that's not something that you're ready for, just be aware that that's a very common occurrence, because your body usually can only focus on feeding and growing one child at a time. So once it knows that you're pregnant and growing another human being, naturally the hormones kind of shift from making milk and being, you know, growing the older child to growing the younger child.
Cool.
Okay. So question number 2 from Jessica at, this is so awful. Matt right now is hating me. Mino, Air Force Base in North Dakota. Did I get that?
Well, that's how I was going to pronounce it. And then I was going to ask you how it was pronounced. So I'm glad that you were the one who had to guess.
Well, let's just be proud that I knew that that was the abbreviation for that state, because honestly, it's that pathetic. Okay. If not, let's just all have a moment laughing at Stacey's geography lack of knowledge. Jessica's mom is going to start paleo and has heard a lot of good things about it. She says, I've been wanting to lose weight for a while and found it hard because I'm here in North Dakota without any support really besides my husband. My husband would like to start losing weight with me too, but we find it hard to find the time to do other diets and exercise. And on top of that, I'm 5 months pregnant. I would like to start paleo, but I want to make sure that it will be healthy for the baby. So I guess my question is, would this diet be okay to do with me being 5 months pregnant? I think Sarah has already covered that in Science with Sarah. I would absolutely recommend that you do it. I wish more than anything that I could go back in time and have paleo pregnancies, because of the health for the baby as well as health for mom during it. It'll help with bones, especially, I find it's very common for women who are pregnant or breastfeeding to often get cavities in their teeth and have bone density loss because if you're not eating and have enough readily available calcium in your body, then your body will take it from your own stores and put it into making a baby. So the more nutrient dense your diet is, the way better off it is for yourself and for your baby. So I would say have at it, but also give yourself some leniency, Jessica, because you're pregnant and you're 5 months. And I know for most people that go paleo, they experience something that we often call the carb flu, where people can get really sick for up to 2 to 3 months as their, 2 to 3 weeks as their body kind of goes through withdrawal of the chemicals and the processed foods and the refined sugars. And so if that's something you're experiencing, I would venture to say that's probably too much stress on your body at 5 months pregnant, and you might want to transition slowly. Give yourself some transition time there. Focus on the things that we suggest focusing on in like transition podcasts, where we talk about, you know, really focus on going gluten-free above and beyond all else, and then prioritize, you know, removing refined sugars, oxidized seed oils, and grains.
The goal while pregnant should not be low carb. I mean, right. We should make it really clear that as a woman who's growing life in your body, you should be eating fruit, you should be eating starchy vegetables, you know, lots of non-starchy vegetables as well, lots of quality fats, lots of quality proteins, but there should be no, you know, restriction of, you know, macronutrients. And, you know, she says that she wants to lose weight, and just want to make sure that it's really, really clear that it's not the time to lose weight when you're pregnant. You know, switching to a paleo diet may help control weight gain, especially in the last couple of months when weight gain can often skyrocket, as I experienced in my second pregnancy. So, you know, it may help keep your weight gain during pregnancy to a, you know, better level, but I hope it's clear that losing weight while pregnant is not it's not a compatible goal with growing a healthy baby.
And I would say, you know, once you focus on growing a healthy baby, and kind of switching that mindset, you will naturally, you know, come out of pregnancy after having a baby, and you will be giving the baby the most easily digestible breast milk possible, which we've talked about before. That's actually what brought me to paleo, and my paleo baby was phenomenally easy. Like, I can't even compare him to the other two. And for the most part, that was related not to general temperament, but to easy digestion. You know, when your baby's not spitting up all the time and experiencing gas and unable to sleep, when they have good nutrient dense, easily digestible breast milk filled with the right kinds of foods and nutrients, then it makes it so much easier on the back end. I just can't express that enough. So I had one more thing that I wanted to say while you were talking, but
sorry,
I totally
interrupt you.
I know you didn't interrupt me. Was a good point I missed because I don't usually read the questions. So, oh well. Well, good luck. And hopefully Jessica's mom is kicking booty too, because, I mean, I love hearing that moms are doing it. That's rocking.
You know, it's, you know, people like to label paleo as a fad diet. Fad diets don't normally appeal to such a broad cross-section of society.
Well, fad diets aren't something that you can sustainably do for a lifetime, right? Like the grapefruit cleanse isn't, so you can't do that for a lifetime. But, you know, the overarching criticism of paleo that I've read in almost all mainstream media is that it's difficult. Like that's the most problems that someone can come up with paleo is that it's difficult.
requires dedication.
Yeah. It's like, oh, if that's the worst of it, right? Like, no one can come out and say you're going to be nutrient depleted. No one can come out and say this is going to harm your health. Everybody's like, well, this is really working for a lot of people, but it's also, you know, hard. It's like, well, you know, if we just got rid of Cinnabons all over the place, then it wouldn't be so hard.
That is true. They still do smell kind of good.
Oh, I was in the mall the other day, which I mentioned earlier, and it was awful. Like, someone was baking those Otis Funkmeyer cookies. I think that there's probably some sort of drug in them because they smell different than other cookies. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I don't, and I'm kind of glad I don't.
Well, for those of you who know cookies the way I know cookies, there's something magical about Otis Funkmeyer cookies and Annie pretzels and Cinnabons. And I don't even want to eat that food, but when I smell it, it's like, oh, it's such a problem. It's disgusting. Don't eat it. Just because I mention it, don't feel like you're craving it and then go out and get it, please. Just avoid it. It'll wreck your gut. You don't need that. Yeah, Ron from Metcalfe, Ontario. Are we ready for Ron?
We are ready for Ron.
All right. My wife is an off and on paleo eater, more off than on. We just found out that she's pregnant, almost 40 years old, with our second child. We both struggle with the lack of sleep, both on shift work and poor... I'm going to start this over. Sarah just totally ruined it.
Don't, because it's hysterically funny.
All right. And poor eating habits. I want to know what true basics are needed or required for paleo when being pregnant. We know that folic acid is important, but any other suggestions would be awesome. What? I already brought this up.
It's true.
So folic acid, we've already covered, is not the most important. Folate is the most important. Sarah also mentioned, and I mentioned, calcium and omega-3 are the three big things that you'll hear from OBs about, even if you are eating a standard American diet, that they would want you to focus on and supplement with. And the good news about the paleo diet is that we have nutrient-dense sources of all of those foods, and you'll be good to go. I would say that from a Sarah perspective, might want to focus a little more on the struggling with sleep and getting that in a really good rhythm before you bring another human being with a wonky schedule into your life, because that lack of sleep and all the hormone problems associated with it are, as you probably know, with snowballing and driving the cyclical pattern with poor eating habits and desires. So you're on shift work. I understand that's really hard. Maybe check out Nom Nom Paleo's blog. She does a really good job of talking about how she makes that difficult life work for their family. I know she does a lot of prep and pre-making of meals on her off days to make that work. And she just started using sunglasses and melatonin eyewear from Sarah's suggestion to help with her sleep cycles. And she's said that it's helped tremendously. She just bought glasses for her whole family because she loved them so much. So see what kind of things that you can focus on like that, natural ways to maybe get some more sleep and come up with a good rhythm, a good pattern for the family, create create routines for what it is that you're doing so that your child, your current child, say they have a current child?
Yeah, no, second child.
Okay, second child. Yeah, so the current child also isn't so disrupted. I know with my kids, the minute that our routine goes awry, their whole world kind of gets turned upside down and it causes way more chaos than, you know, we started with, because we've disrupted their cycle. So as much as you can, you know, create and stick to a routine for your first child and really try to buckle down on that sleep. And it'll help with the food choices and also with preparing mentally and physically for bringing another little one into your world.
I just finished writing the section in my book about the importance of sleep. And I was really passionate about sleep beforehand. And now I'm even more so. Like, it's just, you know, sleep affects everything in your body, and making sure that you are protecting your circadian rhythms. Like, even when you're doing shift work, there's little tricks like the amber tinted glasses that Nom Nom and I have become huge, huge fans of. You know, those.
Thank you, Mark Sisson, by the way.
Yes, Mark, the most brilliant thing ever. Although he said they were $8 and I think I spent 11.
Mark.
I know. But I have such a strong sleep association now with the glasses that I can't put them on too early, because as soon as I put them on, I feel like going to sleep. Like they're that powerful. And I have noticed a huge improvement in my sleep quality just wearing them the last like 30 or 45 minutes before I go to bed. But you can wear them up to about 3 hours before you go to bed. The converse of wearing amber tinted glasses before you go to bed, I mean, even if you're going to bed in the morning because of working on night shift, is to get blue light and UV light exposure when is your day. So, again, I'm going to refer people to Chris Kresser's blog, because I know he wrote a fairly recent blog post about those, you know, special lights that you can get for seasonal affective disorder. But that those lights are great for regulating circadian rhythms. And I know that he's got some recommendations on what types, because that's not something that I am particularly familiar with. But, you know, to do that combination of light when exposure when it's supposed to be your day, and then the amber tinted glasses, when it's supposed to be your night, whether that meshes with what the sun's doing or not, can really dramatically help in terms of setting your circadian clock, which then helps regulate the quality of your sleep. So, you know, the only trick with that is if you're somebody who does like 3 nights, 2 days off, 4 days, 2 days off, like those types of schedules. I mean, those things can still help, but then you're sort of always asking your body to adjust. So it's kind of better to kind of stick with one if you can get on a schedule like that.
Okay. Kristen says, my husband and I are planning to try for our second child, and I have been eating paleo for 5 months. One of the ladies on the show mentioned a prenatal that her naturopath recommended, and I was curious what it was. Just to clarify, Kristen's referring to our probably our pregnancy number one show, or maybe our breastfeeding show, because we had some guests on those shows. She says, I don't eat fish or organ meat because I just can't stomach it, and so I would like to supplement. A paleo-approved vitamin would be great. So Sarah and I kind of texted about this question beforehand because we weren't sure what
vitamin was.
Yeah, what the particular prenatal was. Certainly you know, maybe reach out to the person in particular who mentioned that on the show. But what I would recommend is fermented cod liver oil, which we haven't mentioned this show, but is a really good...
just far into a show without mentioning fermented cod liver oil.
It's crazy, right? it's a really good nutrient-dense supplement-like food, although we don't call it a supplement because it is a whole food. So you're getting that synergistic experience of the omega-3s, the vitamin Ds, the vitamin As. I think there's K2 in there. There's a really good amount of nutrient density coming from the fermented cod liver oil that would serve almost like or better than any supplement that you might be able to get because it's a whole food source. I would also suggest that Kristen look into her stomach acid levels. And the reason I say that is because someone who can't stomach the idea of fish or organ meat or meat in general, oftentimes it's because they don't have enough stomach acid to properly digest and break down those proteins. And so their body naturally kind of rejects the idea. Now, granted, Kristen's, you know, maybe just doesn't like organ meat because a lot of people don't.
Or it could just be a pregnancy aversion.
Well, she's not pregnant, though. She says she's planning on trying.
Then it's... Oh, yeah. Well, maybe she just dislikes it.
Yeah. So I would suggest trying to come up with other ways to eat fish. If you just don't like fish, there's a lot of ways. You don't just have to, like, roast a fish and eat it. fish tacos in like lettuce wraps, or making broth out of fish bones can be a good way.
A heads up though about fish broth, it tastes a lot better than it smells. Just people, it's kind of one of those, like, I have to make it with the windows open, but then I really, really like eating it. But
yeah, it's tasty. You could do it outside. Like, if you have a grill with a burner, sometimes we do our stinky activities that way, and I'm sure our neighbors love us, but it doesn't stay in the house that way.
You don't boil it for days the way you do chicken bones or
yeah, because they're small and softer, so it's yeah.
good.
So what I would say, Kristen, there's a lot of ways to help increase your stomach acid. If you have aversion to these kinds of foods or proteins, I would recommend looking into increasing acid before a meal, such as lemon water. Some people take a shot of apple cider vinegar a day, find a good quality. I think Bragg's is recommended. Or even something like HCl, hydrochloric acid, is that right?
Yeah.
Is what I take. I was a vegetarian for 7 years and I don't have a gallbladder. And so I kind of ruined my body's ability to make this acid. I drink lemon water and acidic beverages as often as I can. I also choose a ginger kombucha because I find that the ginger helps with digestion, and kombucha is really great for the gut. Those sort of things will help you tolerate the idea of protein more over time. It'll help you digest it better in the front end, and then over time your body will naturally learn to make more acid and you won't be so averse to the idea. If it is just you don't like organ meat, Sarah and I really recommend heart and tongue as your opening starters. Sarah's going to tell you to eat lamb kidneys, but I think she's nutso. So just stick to maybe...
Gateway kidneys.
No, it's not. Don't believe her.
No. It is.
If she's having trouble with organ meat, starting with kidneys is going to be too much.
Yeah, the heart and tongue taste-wise is definitely... Taste and texture-wise, definitely easier meat. Although I have to say, food preparation-wise, I think it's a little bit harder because it's really, really obvious what part of the animal you're dealing with. It's kind of hard to dissociate yourself from the fact that you're eating bits of...
Yeah, you can get it butchered, right? Like, we have a quality organic butcher around here, and we had been buying tongue from our farmer and prepping it ourselves. And when we bought it from the butcher... He was like, "Do you want me to prep it for you?" And I was like, "Of course, like, yes, please."
Meat ground and use it the same as you use ground meat, or mix it half and half.
Yeah.
With ground meat just disappears into what you're making.
And I have a really good friend who does the Chris Kresser method of liver. He chops it up into really small,
like pill size,
pill size squares, and freezes it, and then. I guess on a regular basis, however often that is, he takes a couple of the squares like a pill.
Day, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what my friend does, and she loves it. And she's like, "I feel great. I'm eating my liver, and I don't have to, like, taste it or have anything to do with it, and I'm getting the benefits." All right. I mean, whatever floats your boat, find ways to get some nutrient density into your diet other than just ruminant muscle meat, because it's just not a complete... diet lifestyle if you do that, and maybe, you know, get some good pasture eggs in there to try to balance it out too. So
can I throw in the hydrochloric acid disclaimer though? It is contraindicated in people who are taking non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like aspirin or Advil. It is contraindicated in people with a history of stomach ulcers or an active stomach ulcer, or anybody with bleeding disorders. So
yikes.
Any one of those people, do not take hydrochloric acid supplements.
And I would like to caveat that also by saying that both of the supplements that I take on a regular basis, I consulted with a professional in order to figure out what I should be taking and the correct doses. And I would highly recommend that everyone do that. I know Rob Wolf gives some recommendations on how to know whether or not you're taking enough or too much hydrochloric acid. And especially if you're talking about getting pregnant, I'm just not sure I would self-diagnose that way. So... Okay, we ready for Jessica from Ontario?
Totally.
What, Jessica? Another person that says funny words. Oh, that's what I was going to say. When you were doing science with Sarah, you said something so funny. It wasn't avocado.
Is it A? Yeah, A?
No, I mean, that's hysterical, but you were pronouncing a word, and you said the word several times, and you pronounced it in a kinetic sort of way, so it cracked me up, but now I've lost the moment.
Forgotten, though, so, like, the total point of that entire joke is completely lost.
I guarantee you at least one person is going to re-listen to Science with Sarah so they can figure it out.
Where my Canadian accent was coming.
Okay, Jessica would like to know, are there any herbs that are really truly not safe to be consuming during pregnancy? For example, I've been drinking nettle and fennel tea, licorice root tea, and other teas that I have heard positive things about. Are those safe? There's so much information about herbs being contraindicated. Yeah, that's what I said. For pregnant women, but it's hard to really know what is good and what isn't. I'd love to know from a scientific perspective where the truth lies. It's all you.
Yeah, I thought I was going to have to jump into this one. Okay, so the problem with finding out if herbs or drugs are safe during pregnancy is you can't just design a test where you have like a group of pregnant women and you say, here, take this. It might be dangerous. We don't know. And then a group of women say, no, don't take that. And we'll compare the two and see what happens. No one's going to sign up for a clinical trial like that. So when we find out that things are harmful, for a developing baby, it's typically by accident. We think it's okay, so we end up letting women have it, and then we find out it's not. So, you know, when things are, you know, really clearly not okay during pregnancy, you know, thalidomide, we now know, is really, really bad to take during pregnancy. You know, that's usually pretty easy information to come by. Doctors will have a really good list. There is a huge, huge, huge collection of drugs and botanicals and herbal supplements that we think is probably okay. And they tend to have warnings on the bottle, like may not be safe during, you know, consult with a physician during if pregnant or lactating. And those are usually the ones that we think are okay, but there just really isn't enough information to know. So what I would say is, you know, when you're talking about things like teas, you're talking typically about things that have been consumed for hundreds of years. I would double check and make sure that any of the supplements or teas that you're drinking are not used as natural labor inducers. Those are definitely the ones that I would avoid. So I'm specifically thinking of things like evening primrose oil, raspberry leaf tea. Can you think of any others? Why anyone would take that anyway?
I think there's some Rubio's teas that have a lot of the components of what you're mentioning, because I remember being told not to drink those. The other things that I would say aren't safe, that's maybe not an herb, is honey, because you're at risk for botulism, and cured meats. Those aren't necessarily herbs, but those are the only other ones that I can think of that there's a lot of hype about what you should and shouldn't be eating when you're pregnant. And when I looked into it, those were honestly the two things that I was the most concerned about.
Yeah, I think for me it was – I drew a line between risk of parasites and risk of food poisoning.
Yeah.
So, like eating raw eggs is a risk of food poisoning. Raw meat – raw deli meats is a risk – raw deli – yeah, deli meats – yeah, no, raw deli meats. I'll stick by that one.
Technically, it's not raw because it's cured.
Like deli meats that you're not re-cooking.
Cooking, yeah.
So deli meats or raw fish is a risk of parasites. So for me, I kind of felt like the risks associated with getting a parasite or the potential problems that getting a parasite would cause during pregnancy were, for me personally, my own, you know, risk assessment. That was not a risk I was willing to take. But the risk of, you know, one in a million eggs having salmonella, that was, for me, an acceptable risk. So I continued to eat my eggs sunny side up when I was pregnant. But I didn't eat sushi. So those are the things that are sort of more, you know, every doctor is going to give you a list of the foods that you should and shouldn't eat. And when they say to limit your fish because of mercury, go listen to our first pregnancy show and eat more fish instead of less.
Definitely. Okay. Did you mention castor oil?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't.
Yeah, yeah. Don't do castor unless you're, you know, ready to pop out a baby. Okay. That was the only other thing I could think of. Jennifer says, hi, I just started following the autoimmune paleo diet and found out I'm pregnant. Is it okay to stick to that, or should I do regular paleo to make sure I'm getting enough variety of nutrients? I think, Sarah, you mentioned this a little bit, and I would just recommend to Jennifer, if you're already following it and you're doing okay with AIP, obviously there was a reason that you started, I would say stick with it as much as you can. If you feel the need through deprivation or for other reasons to go off course, I would stick to the list of foods that we've provided before about autoimmune to include last, and that would be nightshades and egg whites.
Tomatoes that are also nightshades. You just said that. I will just add that, you know, really what the autoimmune protocol is an even more nutrient dense version of a nutrient dense paleo diet. So you're really cutting out, again, the sort of the least nutrient dense of the nutrient dense foods that are still included. So the only thing that I want to make sure of is that Jennifer is eating enough vegetables, because I have seen this a lot now that people who tackle the autoimmune protocol get a little veggie phobic. So they go, well, I can't have all of these vegetables because they're contraindicated for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and I can't have any of these ones because they're FODMAPs. And if you follow Diane Sanfilippo's recommendations of avoiding insoluble fiber, which I do disagree with, then that cuts out basically everything that's left. And so a lot of people that are following the autoimmune protocol are not getting enough vegetables. And I really want people to focus on sort of akin to Dr. Terry Wall's recommendations of eating way more vegetables. I want to make sure that people are getting that variety of vegetables when they implement the autoimmune protocol, because I think that's really important. So I sort of will throw out that caveat of the autoimmune protocol is perfectly safe to do during pregnancy. It is a very nutrient-dense diet, but you do need to make sure that you are getting lots of vegetables. And there are plenty of vegetables that are low starch that are non-FODMAP. So there is lots of variety to choose from.
Do you have a post on that that we could link to, or some list somewhere? Probably.
Yes, I do. There's actually a new ebook that I was a consultant on by Anne Angelone that is the entire book is basically food lists, and it subdivides all of the vegetables by, you know, what potentially, and it goes into more than just FODMAPs and SIBO veggies. She goes into oxalates and salicylates for people who have those extra sensitivities. So it's a really great resource for people who are trying to figure out which vegetables they're sensitive to and which ones they're not. So we can link to my review.
Cool. Okay, last question. Mel from Virginia. Hi, Mel. I hope you're a part of our meetup group. Says, hi, I love the podcast and I can't wait for your cookbook to come out. I am pregnant and I am planning for a home birth. Well, you are just awesome, Mel. I've been encouraged to drink and eat through labor. I'm wondering if you could recommend good drinks and paleo food that I can have during labor, specifically drinks or foods that will give me energy and stamina. Should I focus on carbs or protein? I would say that Mel needs to focus on whatever she feels like eating, and I would recommend that she have a variety of foods that she just regularly likes around the house. I've heard from women who have home births that smoothies is a really welcome thing for them when they're in labor, because it's something that they can just kind of sip on. So if you can make a smoothie, let's say with if you're eating egg yolks and coconut milk and avocado and just like a really nutritionally dense smoothie, you could go like a banana sun butter route. You could also go like a green smoothie route with spinach and stuff in it, whatever you think you might like. Also, broth would be a really good idea to have around as kind of a calming thing to sip on that could give you energy. Kombucha and coconut water come to mind. I don't know, is kombucha safe for people who are pregnant? We've gotten that question. I never know how to answer it.
So, absolutely, yes.
Okay. So kombucha is really energizing for me. That might be something that would be good for you to sip on and feel good about. Maybe make a batch of ginger iced tea. Like you can make brew a batch of tea a couple, you know, ahead of time and then put it in the fridge. I know you don't know when you're going into labor, but just try to have that available in the fridge. I would probably think I wouldn't be interested in protein, frankly. I remember what labor was like, and the idea of like eating a chicken breast wouldn't have appealed to me. But if that's something that you like noshing on around the house right now, maybe have that available just in case.
Both of my pregnancies were with midwives. My first one got complicated. Both of them were in hospitals. My first delivery got very complicated, so we don't need to talk about that. My second one, though, they just ignored the hospital policy, and they brought me food. And my doula brought me soup, and I was pre-paleo, so she brought me bread rolls, but we'll just ignore that part. The soup was the most amazing thing I'd ever eaten, and I think it was probably just like it was whatever was hot at Whole Foods. But I like soup just totally hit the spot. It was just exactly what we needed, and I was on Pitocin, and my labor had stalled, and so it was just before they were going to ramp up the Pitocin, so it was like pretty much like right before I was in transition. It was like the best thing ever. And it gave me energy to get through the next really, really, really intense few hours. So, cause Pitocin without drugs makes me a rock star. I just have to throw that out there.
I did the same thing with Finn.
You're a rock star too.
Yeah.
Pitocin with no drugs, rock star.
Also not recommended. So I just people avoid that altogether.
This was pre-paleo. My body was not cooperating. But this was also my choice to do no drugs was because of my reaction to the drugs.
Oh, me too. I was saying Pitocin is, if you can avoid Pitocin at all costs, just.
Yeah, my midwife told me, you don't have a body that's going to do this without Pitocin. After the fact, because it was kind of like we ended up there. This is, for stories is not what this episode's about. We don't need to go there.
Point being, we've both been through the most intense labor that you can possibly go through, which is on Pitocin without pain medication. I mean, that's kind of like being in transition for a whole day. And I wasn't really interested in much at all. The only other thing that I can recommend, actually, that I do remember wanting and liking was popsicles. I wasn't paleo, so I think I had like a fudgesicle at the time. But there are really good recipes. I know Alana's Pantry has one for a like homemade fudgesicle, or I know, Sarah, you have like a spinach pop recipe. If you
they posted a new popsicle, like it's like I called it Monkey's Lunch Eskimo Pies. They're a banana and almond butter ice cream filling covered in chocolate. Mm. Those those would just be yummy anytime. I mean, you could just have those in the fridge just to have them in the freezer. Just have them in the freezer.
So try, I mean, just, I would suggest try to have a variety of foods so that if you do decide that you would like something, that it is available to you.
That makes sense to me.
Cool. And we're done with the show and you survived, Sarah.
Just barely. Thank goodness for the mute button for all those coughing fits I had that you didn't get to hear.
And there were plenty of embarrassing moments for me. So you're welcome, everyone. All right, well, yeah, I am going to go get out of these dirty, sweaty CrossFit clothes, which an hour and 15 minutes ago felt really cool and right now feel really disgusting, and then try to get my relaxation on.
I'm going to go to bed because my husband's out of town, so I have to get up earlier.
You need some sleep.
Got to get rid of this cold.
And broth, and kombucha, and oregano oil, and fermented cod liver oil. I hope you're doing all those things.
Yes, I am. Who do you think I am?
Just making sure. Maybe, you know, your brain got foggy for a minute.
No, I'm pretty much on it.
All right, everyone. Till next week, when I believe we're going to have a guest on. No? No.
I think our guest is in 2 weeks.
Never mind. It's just us. You're stuck with us. Oh, well. I mean, they must...
How are we?
14 people like us just by ourselves. So there's that.
Oh, did I tell you? I didn't tell you this. We got an email from one of our male listeners who just wanted to tell us how much he liked the show, which, like, totally, thank you. And he used the joke, like, I'm one of your 6 male listeners. I just thought that was the most hysterically funny thing ever. So it's instead of 6 listeners, it's 6 male listeners. It's not cool.
Well, now I know that there's at least 3 if we're not counting Matt. So
we can, well, let's say 4 because we can count Matt.
Okay. Well, at least we know steadily that 4 males are listening to the show. Oh, male listeners, why don't you submit questions related to maleness? You know, like male hormones, problems with your life, things going on you want us to answer. We would love to have, you know.
Do you actually think we could answer those questions?
We could get some guests on here for sure.
You could get some guests to answer your questions because we would be so useless at it.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think that we know everything, Sarah.
Okay, you're going to start a coughing fit.
All right. So, also, Matt told me that I really, really, really need to remind people to please, if you enjoy listening to the show, leave a review on iTunes. I know it sounds silly, and maybe you've already left one and you think that you've done your job, and we appreciate it. However, the way iTunes works is... ratings are done when people leave reviews. So the more often that you leave reviews, the more people will find our show. And we're hearing from people, even in just the questions asked tonight, that the reason that they went paleo is because they found our show and that it inspired them. So the more people that can find the show because maybe it's ranked number 20 instead of number 50 is really dependent on you guys. Not just downloads, but the number of reviews that you leave. So if you wouldn't mind stopping by and leaving a review for the show, we would really appreciate it. Not just for our own egos, but for helping other people find the show as well.
I'm going to go leave a review right now.
Thanks. All right. Have a good one, everybody.
Night.
If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Okay. Do you want me to read the questions?
Oh, does that mean I have to answer them first?
The dynamic of the show goes so off kilter when that happens.